Thanks so much for joining us today, Dale.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate your time and interest.
It's all right. Now, first question. Easter Island is extremely isolated, located around 2,300 miles off the coast of Chile. How is Rapa Nui inhabited?
Okay, I will happily answer that question. I just want to start out first by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land, both past and present, not only there in Rapa Nui, or in Australia where you guys are at, but also on Rapa Nui where the culture has been there for almost a millennium.
Mm.
These are the Rapa Nui that are there today. They're just an awesome continuation of Polynesian people that arrived there maybe around 11 to 1200 AD. They got in their very large Polynesian canoes, most likely from the interaction sphere of Mangareva and Pitcairn and Henderson Island, and settled the island. When they got there, they found a real paradise, birds and trees and sea mammals, and it was something perfect for exactly what they were looking for, to sort of move from their old island called Hiva and move into the new island, which we now know is Rapa Nui. We have the English name Easter Island because on April 5th, 1722, a Dutch explorer, Jacob Rogegreen, he saw the island and said, "Hey, today's Easter, and hey, there's an island, so that must be Easter Island."
Of course. That's the natural way of knowing things, definitely. That must be Easter Island.
That must be the island. So, and then since there, since the contact period until today, you know, the island is coming up on really almost becoming a millennium culture.
Mm.
Now, in Australia, we know we have human groups there for 65,000 years.
Yeah.
Making some of the longest continuous cultures in the world. But Rapa Nui in its own right, and one of the most isolated places, is soon to be a millennium culture. So for me, very interesting as an anthropologist, archaeologist.
Yeah, of course. Well, in 1995, Jared Diamond popularized the leading collapse theory. What does this theory suggest?
Yeah, so in 1995, he starts out with a very interesting piece called Easter's End. It was just sort of on the tail end of when some other publications were being put out that had gone into the island's ecology, but of the past. We call it paleoecology. And they started to see that at one time Easter Island maybe had millions of palm trees. There were lots of birds. As I said earlier, it seemed to be sort of a paradise for these Polynesians coming there. But Diamond took an idea a little bit further 10 years later in his book, where he had this idea that cultures can collapse if they're in the right environment, if they're in the right place of time. Most human cultures are ready to collapse. And it's just sort of branded the Rapa Nui people as this, you know, sort of this group that couldn't control themselves. They had these bouts of overconsumption, and monumental architecture went crazy, building almost 1,000 statues and 300 platforms that they went on. The statues, the Moai, went on top. And he basically just simply said, well, we've got to look out for cultures like these. We want to learn from them. They can tell us of things we need to avoid. But now that we're sitting almost 13 years later, the majority of tenants that are held by the collapse narrative have sort of just been empirically proven as wrong.
And
so you have sort of this popular myth on one side that he made, and it's really a myth. And some of us feel it was a way to popularize his science and history, but you know, he really didn't do a lot of his own empirical work. He just sort of synthesized other people. So most of my colleagues and people that have been working on the island for some 20 years, we slowly have going back and forth and showing a few things where he may have said it passed like this, but our evidence doesn't support that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we need to always go back to, you know, these narratives, how we see the past, challenge them with new evidence and new technologies and new theory, and hopefully we can have a better understanding of the people of the past.
Yeah. And could you elaborate a bit, just connecting to that, could you elaborate a bit just on how this collapse theory might be an inaccurate explanation of what happened to the people of Rapa Nui?
Sure. I think the most common one that you get is that they cut down all the trees to move the Moai statues. Some work has suggested there might have been up to, you know, 20 million palm trees on Easter Island. and the idea that these Rapa Nui slowly cut them down so they can make sled rollers and they could have slash and burn agriculture to burn, you know, forests to plant some of their taro and sweet potato. But what we really realize is that although humans do put an impact, there could be other things like the rats. Terry Hunt, an archaeologist from University of Arizona, said for years that just what happened in Hawaii, you have these rats that would attack the palm nuts. And as these Polynesian people are bringing the rat with them on their travels, sure enough, once the rat gets there, it finds these little nuts like a filet mignon. And they start eating all the ways that, you know, all the way that these trees, these palm trees, need to regrow and replant themselves, and the nuts aren't there anymore. We've had other ideas that the humans didn't cut down all the trees, maybe something like a fungus or sort of like a Dutch elm disease or something that we can't really trace at the moment because we don't have evidence of those trees, plagues. So that's the main one. And what we're finding out is those trees probably weren't the best to actually transport statues. And in fact, a small group of 50 people moving the Moai like a refrigerator probably would be the easiest way to move the statues on a flat plane. Something else that gets thrown out there, another specific example, is the idea of warfare and cannibalism. And again, some of the best osteologists in the world who look at bones, especially that of humans, they find little evidence of wounds of warfare or evidence of cannibalism in the record. In fact, these people are eating much more sweet potatoes and taros and sort of fish from the reef and rats. Again, they play a role, and most likely that have the culture fed. The last one, if I may, is sort of based on our research, is this idea that Diamond and then another gentleman called this group, Paul Bond and John Fenley, who sadly just passed away, they have an idea that there's nothing more than sort of competition between all of these clans on the island. So the clan was sort of divided by the original chief, whose name was Hotumatua, and with his sons, they divided the island accordingly. And through time, the clans grow larger, there's more clans. But the narrative tells us, oh, these groups were only competing with each other to build bigger statues and to have these platforms, and they would have warfare because of it. And what we're finding out is that much of the stone is probably being used communally. And they're actually going to these quarries to make the Moai, to make the Pukau, which are the top knots. And they're only coming from certain quarries, but everyone on the island has them. And that suggests that there must be some type of information sharing or a way that these resources are being used uniformly throughout the island. And that for us doesn't suggest competition. What it's suggesting is some type of collaboration between the members of the clan.
Right, of course. Well, I'm so sorry, but that's all the time we've got, Del. Thank you so much for joining us.
Right on. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I hope we got the listeners just to think a little bit different about Easter Island. They're still alive and vibrant today. They did not collapse. So if you leave anything from this chat with us in the morning, remember the Rapa Nui people are alive and well.
Thank you so much.